please be advised.
Spoiler alert episode. Spoiler.
Please be advised. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Hello, everybody.
Welcome.
Welcome.
To the Spider-Man Spoiler Alert episode
58. 58 spoilers.
Damn.
That's a lot.
That is a lot of spoiler eps.
377 regular episodes? Then, that's a lot.
Yeah, and then just 58 spoilers.
You guys must be old.
We are.
Yeah.
We are. We're each kinda coming up on 80.
Yeah.
We've been doing this show since the 20s. It's been fantastic.
Yep. It's 4 a year we've been doing. So
four new microphones.
I know. It was nuts. It was all teletype when we first started doing the first one. So this is just to let everybody know what a spoiler ep is, if you're new to the program, we're going to go into the whole everything with the Spider-Man movie. The
stingers,
everything. So if you haven't seen it, hit pause, go watch it, and then come back.
With great spoilers comes great responsibility.
That's absolutely correct, sir. Outstanding. Spider-Man reference right out of the gate, folks. This episode's going to be hot.
Well, let's introduce our guest.
Let's introduce our guest. First-time guest.
First-time guests, and brought to us from Jeff Fox, our Uber producer of podcasts.
Well, that sounds like he works for the rideshare company.
Yes.
Which is not. In this climate right now, we
No. And these is two gentlemen from the Blast Off Comics podcast, Scott Tipton and Judd Myers, ladies and gentlemen.
Outstanding. So, gentlemen, tell us a little bit about the podcast and everything you're doing. And you have a store.
Yeah. We have a store in North Hollywood, in the Arts District there on Lancashire and Magnolia.
I got to say, that area is fantastic.
It is.
When I first moved to Los Angeles over 20 years ago, I lived on Lancashire and Morrison. It was very different. So
was Pitfire even there?
No. Pitfire hadn't been there. The Haha Cafe was a Mexican restaurant. It hadn't become a comedy club yet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not joking. And there was mattress stores.
Yeah.
And heroin, right?
It was a nice crack trade. It was fantastic. So your store, how long has your store been there?
5 years. And it's sort of focused on vintage, vintage comics, the history of comics. We're sort of known as the historians. You'll find things in there that are things that you don't really see in Los Angeles.
Like what?
Like a Spider-Man number one.
Oh.
Like an Amazing Fantasy 15, the first appearance of Spider-Man. Like,
I don't know if these are the right guys for this spoiler episode.
Yeah, I know. It's weird the way when I booked them, I'm like, this isn't going to work out.
If you come to the shop, you'll see handmade cherry wood fixtures and, things that are $20,000, $40,000 books.
Wow. What does Spider-Man 1 go for?
Well, we sold the Spider-Man 1 that was in 9-0, which was a really high grade book. That was $100,000.
Holy shit.
That helped our year.
Yeah.
That's a bad year.
Yeah, the one we have in the case, the Spider-Man one we have in the case is like mid-grade. It's signed by Stan Lee, and that's $20,000. And then there's an AF-15. AF-15s go about $40,000,
$50,000. Wow.
Yeah. Unless you have like a really high grade, 9.2, 9.4, and then it's like $250,000.
Really?
But isn't it hard to get those because now age alone makes them degrade?
Yes. Well, the less there is of something, the more people want it.
Right.
So
those kind of things still do exist, though. Occasionally we'll get something, we'll just walk in the front door, and it looks like it's been on a rack since 1945, which is gorgeous.
Wow.
So how do you guys, let me ask you, how do you come up, tell us a little bit about that. What is that market like? What is that coming across, that rare of comics?
Well, it's changed a lot. I mean, it used to be nobody knew what they had. So, there was no eBay. Now everybody suspects and they go online and they can get information and they think, they find something in their garage and it's got to be worth something.
Right.
But there's still a whole generation of people that I have older people that come in and they say, I had this tucked away in the magazine that I put there in 1956. And, still beautiful, sort of pressed in there and perfect.
Wow.
But the industry has changed a lot anyway. So you're talking about a billion-dollar industry.
Wow.
We still get, I flew to West Virginia to look at a collection that was I don't know, there's like 100,000 books there. And a reverend who wanted to get rid of his comics because he started reading the news and he felt that he no longer wanted these books in there because of the content that was happening. That was gay superheroes and, you know, black and Hispanic superheroes. And it was just that kind of stuff he didn't want in his house anymore.
Well, now, when you look at, like, a collection of, like, 100,000 comics, yeah. Like, is that something you could even buy or store?
Well, in that case, it was I had to rent a truck.
Yes.
And you just didn't put him in the back of the Corolla?
No. Considering who this guy was, I couldn't get away fast enough.
Right.
He wanted to show me his gun collection. And,
oh.
Yeah,
and he also had
memorabilia.
And feeding his pet wolf in the kitchen.
Yes, he had a wolf in his kitchen named Lobo with a big glass wall. And it was just this rabid wolf that he had in there. And
wow.
his the water taps were holy water, like, you know, blessed water and regular water.
And the thing that bothered him was superheroes being gay.
Right.
Yes.
Right. But he also said, you know, hey, I want to talk to you about, you know, when you're Jewish, aren't you? I said, yeah. He said, well, when you killed Jesus. And I said, I'm relatively certain it wasn't me.
Yeah.
And then we had this extraordinary conversation. And I called Scott in the bathroom and said, okay, we're going to buy this thing and I'm going to get out of here. Like now, like right now. But yeah, I drove it across the country and brought it back here and put it in our warehouse.
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
So what is, before we get into the film, what was the first, if you can remember as a kid, the comic that, what was the first that got you into like, oh, this?
I'm going to let you take that one and then I'll.
All right. Well, what got me into all of this was Adam West's Batman. Mm-hmm. I remember being a little kid and my mom was plunking me in front of the TV saying, you'll like this, watch it. And Adam West's Batman was just, you know, that's what I liked. That's what I wanted to be. That taught me everything. The first comic was at the Rexall, and it was a Spidey Super Stories with Spidey and Iceman. Iceman was hanging off one of those sky buckets he'd have at Disneyland. I remember seeing it like it's right in front of me.
And Spidey Super Stories was an offshoot of the
Electric Company.
Yeah.
So this was a Spidey comic just for preschool kids that was in the mid-70s.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Morgan Freeman was on it.
Easy Reader was it?
Oh, I remember. Yeah. Yeah.
And Spider-Man was on it.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yes.
You know, be here next time when Spider-Man says, wow. And then there's a big sort of word, right. Empty word balloon.
Yeah. And what was yours?
The first comic that I remember reading was, it's a world's finest book, and it was Batman and Superman, and it was a Nazi cover. They were trapped by the Nazis, and they were being starved. And they were both in chains, and Batman was, like, eating this big chicken leg. And the Nazis were around going, you know, Batman was like, I had to do it. I'm so hungry. And they finally broke him. And Superman was there going, how could you? And it was like one of those, you know, alternate universe stories where
Batman would never eat the chicken.
Exactly.
We all know that.
It was really weird. It was weird enough for me to go, okay, this is, I got to keep reading this.
We should go all around now. I can remember my first
what
comic.
It was
An Amazing Spider-Man. And my parents had bought me a subscription. I had never read comics before. And it was at a time, okay, we are old, that you would get them mailed to your house on a monthly basis.
Mailed flat.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. And, it was, I don't remember the issue number, but I remember what it had on the cover. It was Spider-Man. It was the Rocket Racer. And then it was a guy in a giant wheel.
The big wheel.
The big wheel. Yep. And they were all together in this one episode. Yeah. And it was, they were all chasing each other. And the big wheel was on the cover. And that was my first comic book. And Spider-Man has always been my favorite superhero. Mm. So every time a Spider-Man movie comes out, I get excited. With the exception of the last two Andrew Garfield ones, which made me angry. But, so Spider-Man has always had like a special place in my heart for me, especially the Sam Raimi movies, because they were based on those comics that I grew up on. Mm-hmm. And the old 60s animated show and all those. In fact, in this Spider-Man movie, which I love, is they go back to, they use a version of that theme and the opening credits.
Yeah.
I love that.
Which was so cool. I'm like, oh, cool.
Yeah,
so
and an orchestra
still
doing it.
And an orchestra
really
doing
cool.
It. Yes.
I was like, that was awesome.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, for me, it was the Detective Comics. It was Batman. And then we started, my older brother and I, we lived in Madison, Wisconsin, and would take the bus in downtown to go to Capital City Comics, which was, this is in the 70s, so this is pre-merchandise. So it was just a dark room with a bunch of nerds.
Yeah.
And there you just get the stuff. And then I remember there was this back room And the only, like, we were too young, like, only, like, diehard comic guys, and we were like, can we, and they're like...
It was like the porn room in the back of a movie
well,
section.
Well, yeah, it was like the secret vault, and they're
the
like...
Comic book champagne room.
Yeah, exactly. It was. But we were too young, and they just didn't want us, like, getting our dirty little kid hands on and messing it up. But I remember just this, and you would just go there and look at comics, and there was no... T-shirts. There was nothing. Nothing. Like, you obviously a comic book shop couldn't survive that way probably anymore. But
yeah.
That's what it was in the 70s. And then I too started getting subscriptions to the Hulk and Power Man and Iron Fist. And I think my brother got a Spider-Man one. So we'd trade and I'd read those. So that was it. Then it was like comics every week, and that went through college. We would go to a comic book shop.
Yeah.
And so.
All right. So let's get into it. Let's talk about Spider-Man: Homecoming. Like we were saying on the regular episode, we both really enjoyed this film. It was definitely a different take. It was had a John Hughes feel and vibe to it.
So much so that they had him watching a...
Yes.
Well, there was a clip of Ferris Bueller's Day Off that they were watching, which was really cool.
And the only thing I thought was missing a little bit, although that was in Civil War, was that kind of like that melancholy... motivation that Spider-Man has from his uncle being killed and this responsibility that he feels he has. Like, I felt like it was, but I'm mixed on it. I felt like it was kind of glossed over a little bit in this movie, even though I know because of Civil War in the background, it was there. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, something tragic happened to Uncle Ben. That story is still very much present. We just didn't see it again, which is fine. I didn't need to see the origin again. But I felt like this was a really interesting, fun take, and I felt like it had much more to the spirit of the comics than the last two Sony disasters.
So, Judd, Scott, what'd you guys think of this?
You want to go first or should I go?
No, you go ahead.
Go first. I'm with you. I love Spider-Man. Those first two films, I think, are nearly perfect versions of how to adapt that kind of material.
The Tobey Maguire ones.
Agreed. Those are still my favorite.
And this, I wanted to like this movie so badly. And it's a great movie. It's a fun movie. It's a fun action movie. It's not a very good Spider-Man movie. I don't like Spider-Man in this movie. He's kind of a jerk. What you were talking about with the origin, I agree. I don't want to see the origin again. But it needs to be grounded in that. And I didn't get that. I didn't get any sense of power or responsibility. All he wants is to be an Avenger. Sandwich shop gets blown up. Oh, well. Steal Flash's car. Oh, well. It really breaks that kind of, like, moral boundary for what Spider-Man should be like. I don't get the feeling that this Spider-Man wants to do anything for any reason other than I want to be an Avenger. And they do, I mean, they try and play with that towards the end where you see him not taking the suit and not rushing back and being a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Right.
But Spider-Man to me is about one thing. It's about guilt. Why does Spider-Man do what he does? It's guilt. He knows he made a mistake and he's got to atone for it. And there's not even a hint of a mention of it here.
And it was missing. The other thing.
That's a good point. I did not take that into consideration when I watched this. I think part of it was I was putting it up against the Andrew Garfield one so much that
right.
Well, thank God. It's not those.
Yeah. It was the bar was so low at this point.
Right. all right. So Judd, what do you think?
Well, I differ in my opinion. That's what a good partnership is all about.
Yes, yes, it is.
It's partly because I'd spend every day in the shop. You know, it's 7 days a week of different types of comic books, different takes on superheroes. So there are so many different Spider-Man comics. Every new writer has a different take on it. And there's, you know, there could be two, three different Spider-Man comics at the same time, but they have a different take on Peter Parker and Spider-Man, or Miles Morales Spider-Man.
That's the new Spider-Man.
That's the new Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
But that's sort of ultimate Spider-Man.
Now, what's his origin, just to kind of fill in our fans that don't necessarily know that there is another Spider-Man?
Yeah. Well, Miles Morales was in the Ultimate Universe. He's a half black, half Hispanic kid who's in school. Mm-hmm. He's not necessarily a kid that wants to be Spider-Man. Spider-Man exists in the Ultimate Universe. Peter Parker exists in the Ultimate Universe. He's really smart, and he just wants to finish school and do well. And he finds himself continually getting sort of wrapped up in every time something bad happens. He ends up getting wrapped up in it. And, of course, ends up being in a situation where he also gets bitten. He also gets, you know, the powers of Spider-Man, but is reluctant doesn't want to do it at all.
So it's a different origin story.
Totally different origin story until in the Ultimate Universe, Peter Parker dies. Peter Parker is killed in the Ultimate Universe. And someone has to take up the mantle. And for a while, Miles Morales is like, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to do it. I have my friends, I have school, and I want to go to college. And of course, the more bad things happen, the more he feels like he has a responsibility to do something.
So then in the film, when Donald Glover's character, Aaron Davis, mentions he has a nephew.
Yes.
That you thought that was...
That's Miles Morales.
Oh, it's Miles
Morales.
It is, yeah.
And you were Aaron Davis. Is that one of the things you liked about the film?
Absolutely. Right. Aaron Davis is the Prowler. Like, that's who his character is, the Prowler, and his nephew in the Ultimate Universe is Miles Morales.
And really, he was just Michael Keaton's henchman in the film. Like, you're like, oh, that's Donald Glover, but he's got kind of a minor...
He's looking to buy arms, right?
Yeah, he's kind of a
Prowler has always been a kind of like an outsider. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who sort of just likes to do his thing and steal his stuff and get away with it. But in the Ultimate Universe, he's more of a guy that walks the line. He's almost like, is he a hero? Is he a villain?
Right.
You know, you don't know. But
he's the guy that gets his hand webbed to the car, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I got ice cream in here.
Yeah.
Which is a great line.
Yeah. But I guess my point is this. In comics, you have, and I think Marvel movies are doing a great job of this. Mm-hmm. Every movie has a different writer, director, vision, and they all have a different feel, a different vibe. In the comics, it's the same. You know, Brian Bendis writes Ultimate Spider-Man. But Dan Slott writes Amazing Spider-Man, and it's a completely different book with a different art style and everything like that. And I just sort of looked at this movie as a, hey, this is an altered version of what Spider-Man can be. Mm-hmm. And they took elements from all different sort of places. I went with my daughter. She's 15, and I see everything through her lens. And she absolutely loved it, partially because they skewed it younger. He's a sophomore.
For sure.
Right.
I didn't have any sort of responsibility as a sophomore in high school. I didn't really think about that at all.
This went more towards Ant-Man, this movie.
Yeah, I think so.
As far as like skewing a little bit younger. I mean, you have younger characters, you have a younger story, you have a much lower body count than some of the other Marvel movies.
That's true.
So I saw it with my kids too. They're 12 and 9, and they both loved it. And one of the things, too, that I think also we were talking about in the previous episode is that we just have such a love for the Sam Raimi movies because that's, like we said, with the Spider-Man we grow up with reading in the comics. Mm-hmm. Like, one of the things that I thought was missing, not just that responsibility part from this movie, was that one of the hooks of Spider-Man when he was first created was that he was a superhero with real-life problems. Mm-hmm. Like, there was never enough money. There was always something problem. Like the way that Sam Raimi beautifully presented him as, like, an empty seat at, like, Mary Jane's, you know, theatrical production. Spider-Man always got in the way of his life, and he could never reconcile them. So that was one of the things, like, I think kind of was touched on and hinted on in this movie, but I would have liked to have seen a little bit more of that where the sacrifice had to be made. Look, I have to be Spider-Man, and I'm losing these things along the way, and I can't have them.
Sometimes you have to be steady, even if it means losing the thing you love the most. That Aunt May thing that she says to him in Spider-Man 2. You know, I mean, that just cracks me emotionally. And I want a bit more of that emotional weight in this one for Spider-Man, because to me it's so much of a morality tale.
I thought that was going to happen either in the elevator scene, where all his classmates are in the elevator, or the boat, where I thought someone was going to die, and it was going to be that sort of element of, okay, this is real.
Now, what did you guys think of, like, Iron Man being the mentor? Like as you know, sometimes the way that Spider-Man is presented, like, Nick Fury has been a mentor, like, in comics and in the animated series and things like that. I thought Iron Man was, like, a really good choice. Like, I thought this actually worked. Like, I liked seeing Iron Man as the mentor and him being supervised, and also because Iron Man, the way Robert Downey Jr. plays him, is such kind of an egotistical tick. Like, to play against, you know, this young, bright-eyed kid, I thought was really interesting.
Here's what I want to say, and I want going into all of the – everyone's bringing up real excellent points here, some of them I hadn't considered, but I think why the heavy morality plays that I do like, especially the first one, the Tobey Maguire one, was really serious. I mean, in terms of – I mean, there was obviously added the fun Spider-Man quippy stuff, but that was a real that pathos of I killed my uncle. Why I felt it didn't it didn't bother me that it wasn't in this one was because, well, first of all, Judd, like you, I feel like I like seeing, I just wanted to see a completely different take, because that was the thing about the Garfield ones. They were just doing sort of, they were just rehashing the origin story. I don't need to see that.
And they got all the DNA wrong.
They got all the DNA wrong of the character.
Not really changing it. And so I loved how, why I love the Marvel Universe is the Marvel Universe.
You know who else loves the Marvel Universe now? Oh. Sony.
Sony. Yeah, they're big fans of it.
Yeah, because they basically made the movie for Sony. This was all lawyers fighting it out in back rooms for many, many months.
They figured this out.
Yeah. I also think we're going to see a change. They're skewing everything younger. And certainly, I don't think this movie was made for us. I think it was made for a younger crowd that really, really loved it, and parents with their kids who love that their kids love it. And what I think we'll see in the future is, you know, these younger characters taking over as, you know, Robert Downey Jr. Mm-hmm. gets old and can't walk anymore.
Right.
And Spider-Man will change.
That's Marvel Phase 8.
Right.
Yes.
Well, he'll become like Stan Lee. He'll be the guy yelling out of the window.
Making an appearance.
Yeah,
in everyone.
Exactly.
But Spider-Man will start to change and learn and grow up. I think they were maybe thinking a bit further than just we have to do that right here in this movie.
Right.
I think it's a great point, because I think the 2002, we were all 15 years younger, so right. It was skewed kind of for us that grew up in the 70s and 80s reading these comics, having this very specific vision and idea. And
Watching the cartoon on UHF.
Yeah, right. And we all had a very specific identity with Spider-Man.
And the Sam Raimi films are very much college Peter Parker, which is what we grew up with and what I still think of, even though he shouldn't logically be in college at this point.
Right.
Right.
But to my mind, he's still at ESU. That's what Peter Parker is. Yeah.
But like Tobey Maguire was something like 28 or 29 years old when he was in the first one.
Yeah.
Right.
This kid is 21. His actual age is 21.
Yeah,
so he was 19.
And he was playing a 15-year-old.
Right. Playing a 15, but you know, he's a young-looking 21. And so when he was 19 years old when they were shooting him in Civil War.
Right.
And that's the other thing that why I liked it and didn't. I was just sort of looking at the Maguire one. It's just a separate comic book series. It's a separate artist. It's a separate writer.
Right.
It's a separate thing, because they introduced. I loved how they introduced this kid in Civil War, and the fighting and how he fought in Civil War and was doing the Spider-Man thing with, you know, the quips, because I'm a punk kid saying ha ha, you know, and. They did. You're absolutely right. They skewed this for 15-year-olds and high school kids
and younger.
And the mm-hmm. demographic, and having the whole. We talked about this in the regular episode. The thing in the Sam Raimi ones, the high school kids were just the sort of two-dimensional, jock bully,
right,
cute girl. And this was like, these were fully fleshed out high school kids. The bully wasn't a physical bully. He was just a rich kid that was kind of a
wealthy smug character.
Yeah, that was jealous that Peter Parker was smarter than him and was trying to undermine him as best he could.
Right.
And it's such smart marketing, too, because like when I go, it's four tickets. It's me, my wife, and two kids.
Right.
So it's the kind of thing where, you know, that cracks that family code of like, well, if we make a movie that the whole family can go see, we're not getting one or two tickets. We're guaranteed 2 to 4.
Right. Sure. And by the way, I want to say, as much as I have my reservations, Tom Holland is fantastic.
Yeah.
He's a great Spider-Man.
Yeah. Yeah. He is.
Now, let's talk about Michael Keaton for a moment, too.
Oh.
I'll tell you, it's watching him. I could not stop thinking of Birdman from those scenes. Remember when he was in the Birdman costume? They must have like almost like shared art assets from that. It really felt like literally the Vulture's costume was like taking, well, just get the, you know, we already have it in the computer. Let's just add like propellers or something. And but I thought Michael Keaton, he did not phone it in. I really felt like he was there. He was present. You felt for this guy as a villain. I thought he was a really good villain for Peter Parker and Spider-Man.
I did not see.
They the got comment. Me. They got me with that.
Yeah. That he was the dad of the girl.
When he opens the door, I was,
Yeah, I didn't see it coming either.
It
I thought that was cool.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. That was a fun reveal.
It
was a fun reveal on a lot of levels. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, we had no idea. He just keeps talking about his family, that she comes from an interracial family, all of that stuff. I was like, this is awesome. And I also loved his character arc. They introduced it perfectly. He's just a a contract guy working for the city, the beginning of the movie.
Right.
I got the cleanup contract. You know, there's these glowing rocks. I don't give a shit. The city paid me to do this. And then
I bought trucks for it.
And then Tyne Daly walks in and says,
"You're done."
Done. And he's like, "What?"
And they realize it's Stark who's behind it.
Yeah. So he's just like, "All right." And then tries to go under the radar, but hires morons who fuck it up. Like, I mean, that whole storyline was great. He was a very believable
bad
guy.
It made sense.
Yeah. And it works well with everything about the Vulture character, who's always just been kind of like a thief first and foremost, right, and a scrounger, but tied it in so well with the Marvel Studios universe. And in a way that goes back all the way back to Avengers, and it all makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's excellent, too, because now the Stinger, he's in jail, right?
Right.
And then that criminal comes up and says, "Who's Spider-Man?" And he's like, "I don't know." Yeah. He won't give up. And it's probably because he wants to protect his daughter. I don't know. But that was such
Or it's because he wants to kill himself.
He wants to kill himself. Yeah. Exactly. So he's like.
Now, was that an Easter egg? The guy that came up to him, he had a scorpion.
Yeah, that's Matt Gargan. That's the scorpion. Yeah.
That's who I thought. I thought I thought that was he gets turned into the scorpion.
I love that. We had three or four copies in the store, Spider-Man 20, the first appearance of Scorpion.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty expensive book. We had three or four copies in the store. All gone now.
Really?
As soon as the movie came out, people were like,
"Matt Gargan,
hey, do you happen to have a copy of Spider-Man 20?"
I was going to ask that. Like, when a movie like this comes out, does it drive specific comic sales?
Absolutely.
For vintage, for definitely. Absolutely. First appearances, significant costume changes, significant historical events for that character, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So who is the Scorpion character, anyone who doesn't know is listening.
In the comics, and this is the kind of thing that Marvel Studios is tricky about now, because they're determined not to use J. Jonah Jameson, for good or bad. But for right now, so many of Spidey's villains are tied into Jameson.
Right.
Jameson hired this low-rent detective named Matt Gargan to be a guinea pig to become a superhero villain to go attack Spider-Man, and that guy was the Scorpion.
Right. Well, there's some trivia, too, that we just pulled up, too. J.K. Simmons had expressed interest in returning to the role
of
J. Jonah Jameson. However, once he was cast as Commissioner Gordon in Justice League, all discussions of this happening ceased. But
goddamn DC.
And also, it makes you wonder, really, Hollywood, there's not two actors that could, you know, you have to have the same person.
I'd love to see him back.
Simmons is so good, though.
He's so great.
He was the perfect J. Jonah Jameson. Yeah.
And the Justice League trailer looks awful.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, it's going to be a little while before Peter Parker becomes a professional photographer in the city. And by then, the Justice League films might have tanked. And then he just come on over.
And from what I've seen, a trailer, his Commissioner Gordon is all mustache. Yeah. They can find somebody else to play that role.
There's time. Yeah.
You could CG in a mustache on something.
But so that's traditionally been the Scorpion's backstory. Is he was Jameson's hired thug, who then, as a result, is stuck in that Scorpion suit, and then comes back every few years to attack J.O. Jameson out of revenge.
Because he can't get out of the suit, but he has a tail.
Yes. Which Spidey rips off every couple of years, and he gets reattached.
Right.
So then let's go into the ending of, all right, he's finally going to get brought into
The Avengers,
and this is the thing, and Peter Parker thinks it's another test. Kind of, but I mean, I don't know. That's the thing that was sort of
And
the,
he also
the question.
Feel, I think the intention of the film and the filmmakers was that after this adventure that he has gone on now, he's kind of learned his place and where he's supposed to be in basically the MCU and his life, and that's to be a ground-level superhero and not be an Avenger, which is something that he thought he wanted, and he realized it. So he decides to kind of stay as the, quote, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. I don't think, and I think it was a great moment when he said, "Well, this was a test, right?" And Robert Downey Jr. Yeah, it was a test. And no, there was a whole, you know, room full of reporters.
Right, and then he has to propose to Piper or Pepper. That was
Pepper Potts. Yeah,
that was going to be.
So
Piper, I've been watching too much Orange Is the New Black.
Yeah. So I really felt like it was an interesting choice, and it made sense for the character. But we never really saw how he got there from the adventure to not wanting to be an Avenger, because it's like, well, you could do a lot of good as an Avenger, too. What made you want to kind of stay at the street? Now, I want to get your opinion on this. What do you think, character-wise, made him make that decision to stay as a street-level superhero and turn down the Avengers?
You want to go first?
No, you go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I'm interested. You guys are. We hadn't talked about it yet. Yeah. Yeah. I'm like really
I was
going to
say, you guys are very polite. Always let the other one go first.
Well, see, that was one of the problems I had with the film is I didn't think they made that correlation strongly enough. I didn't understand either why he would want to do it. We don't have a sacrifice point where he lost somebody or something that's important to him that makes him realize he should be focusing on what matters, his neighborhood, his friends, his people. They kind of get to that by, you know, the danger came to his school through the close call with the vulture. But it didn't feel like it sold that well to me. I didn't feel like they made the point, did you?
Well, I asked my daughter. Because I asked her, like, I usually ask her lots of questions afterwards. After Man of Steel, I had a lot of questions. but
why did this movie get made?
Yeah, right.
Please tell me you didn't like this.
Are you okay?
Yeah, you're all right. But this was, I asked her about that. And her response was, I love high school. High school is the greatest time. I love all my friends. He lost his girlfriend. You know, he'd have to give up his best friend. He would have to give up, you know, being with his aunt. She was like, I would do the same thing. Her choice was about, like, okay, he's giving up his childhood. It wasn't about, here's responsibility.
You have a very insightful daughter.
Yes, I do. you can come to the store and see. It's the first time she's working.
Oh, wow.
This summer,
oh,
really? She's working at the shop. her first job.
Nice.
But it's interesting seeing it from a young person's perspective who is in high school right now and imagines having powers and imagines being a superhero.
Sure, as we all did.
But her choice
and do
would be to stay in school and have her childhood before she gives it up. And I asked her, if you had the choice, what would you do? And she said, I would choose to be a kid first and do whatever I could. But I wouldn't want to leave the planet and leave everything behind until I grew up a little bit.
Wow, that's fantastic. Right. And that point of view explains it a lot in terms of the choice that they
to
made.
To us old men.
To us old men, right, who are just like, high school sucked. Like, you should be, you know, like.
Yeah, that's great. She enjoyed high school, and good for
Jesus,
her.
Where's this high school? But no, it's a really valuable thing. You go, wow, that is, you know, maybe, I don't know. I'm trying to think when I was, high school was, I liked playing high school football, but a lot of high school sucked. I really didn't like it at all. So I probably would have liked, I'm out of here. I can be on a spaceship and fight crime. I'm
right,
out.
Right.
But it does make sense, though, because maybe they didn't need to explain it enough or more, which is that it was sort of already explained. It is important to him to be with his friends and to be on the science team and stuff like that. And yeah, and he was sort of saw, I guess he was like, I want to be in the Stark. I want to, and then kind of saw what it is like and went, yeah, maybe I should just, you know, grab guys that are snatching bikes.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe this is a little too, holy shit, like look what happened. I went after this guy kind of when I was told I shouldn't. And look what happened. Now my girlfriend, she has to find out, you know, I pushed her dad and now he's going to jail. She's moving to Oregon. She doesn't like me. I don't know. I could see that of like, because he isn't a rebel in the sense of he isn't the, you know, I hate everyone teenager Peter Parker. He's the, I want to be accepted. I want to be liked.
Right.
And so that.
And, you know, and always from the origin is like he's the ostracized character, too. He's always the one that doesn't fit in high school and he's bullied and.
Doesn't get the girl.
Right. Yeah. Doesn't get the girl. And he's unable to because of his other life. And one of the most poignant moments of the Tobey Maguire one, the first one, was that when he pretty much stood up to Flash Thompson after he had his powers and actually hurt him.
Yes.
And his uncle had a talk with him. Did that make you feel like a big man? You know, just because you can do something doesn't necessarily mean you should.
Right.
And, you know, we get into that whole power and responsibility thing. Like there were those moments that were missing from this film because it just went in a different direction. And but the thing is, I still enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun movie. I really had a great time at the movies. And, you know, these Marvel movies, they don't disappoint.
The ending for me, when he walked away from becoming an Avenger, part of me kind of went, oh, afterwards I thought about it. I went, well, this is the one Marvel character in the movie universe who's just going to be fighting street crime? Well, that's actually kind of cool. You know what I mean? Like, he isn't...
In the Marvel Cinematic.
In the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they're all these giant... I mean, I love it, but they're all these giant stories. I mean, we see the trailer for Thor Ragnarok. I mean, they're just these intergalactic, huge
giant
stories.
Giant, epic movies.
So maybe it's cool to just have...
Yeah, see, I dig that. To me, Spidey's always been like that ground level character.
Yes.
Right.
But I like that when you take him out of the element and put him in things that are way out of his normal reach, he can succeed, and he's great at it, but he doesn't like it. He's so nervous about it. Mm-hmm. And so I think, to me, that works fine.
And it also, it counterbalances, too, in a good way. Like, you have the street-level heroes on Netflix. You have those three series and then the one bad one. And then you have, but they're very adult. They're very mature. So this is Spider-Man, this movie, is the first one that's street level, but also fun and light and more skews younger.
Well, it's the boat scene. To me, like, maybe to me, when he turned down the Avenger thing at the end, I was like, well, maybe it's the kind of, it took some time for the boat incident to sink in, no pun intended. But, like, he kind of screwed up in that fight, bit off more than he can chew. He got the boat split in half. He's trying to save it. Yay, Spider-Man's the hero. You have 98%. Oh, bulk!
Yeah,
and then,
you
know, Iron
work.
Man has
yeah.
to come save him. So maybe he's sort of like...
And fix the boat.
And fix the boat. Right. So, I don't know. That's...
It was a good scene.
It was interesting to me. And as he left that scene... And I love the comedy that, oh, it wasn't a test. There was, he was going to make this announcement. He was going to train him. The idea of, like, is the next one going to be just more like street level crime? Like, there's just a mob boss in New York that he's got to fight? That could be cool.
It's
going to
happen. The timeline for the next Spider-Man movie is going to happen, I believe, after Avengers Infinity War. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
May 2019, when it's supposed to be 2 years from now.
So we'll see, like, you know, after the events of those movies, where he'll be and then where they'll go from there.
Well, no matter what, he's going to fight some kind of super-powered, you know...
Villain.
Insect.
Yes.
Or animal, you know, because there's some kind of, you know, totem that they have to stick with.
Yep,
you know?
It's going to be a vulture, a rhino, a scorpion, or an octopus.
All right.
But I just have to say about the choice about the Avengers. Again, Hannah, my daughter, was very... insightful. She said, maybe he's just scared. And isn't that okay? Is he not a hero because he's scared and decides not to? Mm-hmm. Or is it we have to expect that he's going to do it and you have to push through the fear? And she was like, I don't know. I'm a kid. That would scare me. I might be scared and want to wait.
And that's a normal part of that character because he's so young. And that, you know, I would buy that.
He isn't an ex-soldier. Or you know what I mean? Any of the other ones, their background, they were adults. They were full-grown adults that went through a big adult thing and went, oh, I got to suck it up now. He's a 15 and went, oh, I just thought it was a cool suit.
Yeah.
There's a guy, he's a great comic book writer, Alan Brennert. He shops at our store. And he's one of the best Batman writers ever. And he's from the old, you know, Justice Society of America era. He was, you know, the old days, the 40s, 50s. Mm-hmm. And how he put it was... He said, when I was a kid and we read Superman and Batman comics, we didn't see ourselves as Superman and Batman. We saw our dads as Superman and Batman. Like, that's my dad. Oh. And then sidekicks were put into the comics, and that was what we saw ourselves as. And eventually when we hit, like, the 70s, everything changed because everything in history changed. We had been through so much. All of us kids... We were sort of jaded. We didn't see every, you know, major superhero as our dad and mom. We hated our dads and moms. We saw them as us. And so we wanted to see those hard decisions. We wanted to see drug stories.
Mistakes.
Yes.
And that was where Marvel came in and gave you flawed heroes and heroes with problems. Which you never, the Superman and Batman of the 40s and 50s, they never had any problems.
No.
Right. Everybody at Marvel had problems. And... we as readers, we had problems, and we get, and that's why we identify with them and didn't see them as father figures anymore.
Right.
Now, as historians, it's often cited that Spider-Man was the first hero with everyday problems. Is that true from a historical perspective?
I think I would say it's the first to make it a forefront.
Yeah.
Because the Fantastic Four comes first. Yes. And with the Fantastic Four, I mean, they would have problems paying their rent. Reed would put all his money in bad investments, and all of a sudden they'd be coming to take away his equipment.
Genius Reed would put in.
Genius Reed is not so good at business.
Yeah, yeah, terrible.
There's a time he invested all that money in that movie studio that Submariner ran.
Oh, my God.
That happened, by the way.
This sounds like a reality TV show.
Yeah.
So I would say, and also with the Fantastic Four, you know, they didn't like each other.
Right.
There were some really ugly later personal stuff there, even from the very first. So I think they kind of get the official tag of being the first to have normal human problems.
Yeah, but Spider-Man was...
Spidey made it about that.
It was. It became those things that, let's put in death. Let's put in drugs. Let's put in a sex element.
And, and every month was more about Spidey taking care of his sick aunt and making sure the rent was paid. That was as much and maybe more of the story than fighting the gibbon or the kangaroo that month.
That's so cool. I mean, I love hearing the perspective of the older Batman writer, and because that was what everything was like that in the 70s. Like, I've always been a big fan of TV cop shows. In the 50s and 60s, it was Dragnet, it was Adam 12, the cops were perfect. And then you got in the 70s and you started to see corrupt cops on TV. And
Dirty Harry.
Mm-hmm. You saw drug
deals. He
got results. Well, there was that anthology, a police story that came out in the 70s that was all about, they did episodes where, cops came back from Vietnam messed up, or Korea messed up. I mean, even Hawaii 5-0. I mean, a lot of that stuff doesn't hold. It still looks cheesy from our eyes today. But back then...
Including the series right now, Hawaii 5-0.
Well, I don't count that at all. It doesn't count. It doesn't. It's like the Star Wars prequels. It doesn't register.
It doesn't really exist.
You just made a correlation between the Star Wars prequels and Hawaii 5-0. This is a great show.
That just gave you a window into my childhood. But no, it was like those. I remember that was the only night of the week I could stay up late was to watch Hawaii 5-0. My whole family could. And there was episodes where they dealt with, there was one guy that, it wasn't called PTSD then, but there was a Vietnam vet guy that went nuts and was in a tower shooting at people. And... there was an episode where a woman got raped. I remember my sister asked my dad, "Dad, what's that?" And he's like, "Let's wait till we get to the commercial break." And it was like these were heavy themes. And if you then watch the Dragnets, it was just the cops are good and they're going to come save the day. Yeah. And so I love
like
that.
Car 54, where are you?
All that
too.
Stuff. Adam 12. They were these nice crew cut guys that always did the right thing. And then it makes perfect sense that comics started to get dark, and Peter Parker was this flawed high school kid who didn't ask for this. He didn't come from a special planet. It just happened to him. Mm. Anyway, I went off on a tangent.
Well, there's so many different kind of like mythologies for Spider-Man in the comics right now. I mean, as you guys know, it's gone out in many different directions. One of my favorite runs was Straczynski.
Absolutely.
And just when Peter Parker, he's older, he goes back and teaches at his college. And he's actually the science teacher there. So, you see him a little bit older and more wise, but he's still Spider-Man. He's still doing everything. They add a mystic element to it where it's, there's a reason he was bit by the spider, and then he has these mystic villains coming after him.
Right.
And there is an amazing run that was brought a tear to my eye where he starts to travel backward and forward in time. And he can, do you know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
He can change him getting bitten by a radioactive spider. And he realizes he can erase all the bad things that have happened to him. And it's a decision he has to make. But if he does that, then all the people he saved also don't get saved. So it's like a heart-wrenching decision that he makes. And it goes, and Dr. Strange is with him on this journey. And he goes, backwards and forwards in time to the point where it's like his whole life and whole sense of being comes into focus. And it's such an amazing run.
Yeah, it was a Christmas Carol type.
Yeah, it was.
Storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And the Straczynski storyline was, again, totems. He just went, I'm going to do something that's never been done before, which was surprising to me to have Spider-Man flying through the city and to come around the corner, and there's this old guy in a suit with his shoes off, and he's stuck to the side of the building.
Right.
And says, "Hey, Peter, what, you thought you were the only one?"
Right.
And, okay. So the spider chose him. It wasn't. So he just basically told this different story, a different way of looking at it. Of course, by the end of it, they basically just went to a different storyline and erased everything that came before.
Right.
I love that storyline too, but I do feel obligated to mention that at one point in that story, Peter Parker becomes a giant spider beast and bites a dude's head off.
Oh yes, there's
so
that.
There's a lot about that one I love, but it's not bump free.
Yeah, and then that's when the retcon really begins, is when all of a sudden he's not married anymore, and there's a lot of things.
But also,
that
Straczynski was very good about taking that kind of stuff, but keeping the kind of everyday element of Spider-Man alive in it. You mentioned having him teach in Midtown High again, which was great.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would see him like sitting on top of a building eating a hot dog with Loki after a fight with Doctor Strange.
Right.
You know, and it was still kind of grounded, even with all this crazy mystical stuff they were doing.
Yeah.
Well, let's. Before we wrap up here, let's kind of pick a couple elements from this movie that you are hoping to or have information about that are going to be in Homecoming 2 or any down the road, like the MJ.
Like, what do you want to see more of?
What do you want to see more of?
Or can I say what I want to see less of?
What?
Yeah, sure.
I want less Ned. There was a lot of Ned in this movie. I'm not saying no Ned, but just maybe 30% less Ned.
Why didn't you like to...
He's just there a lot. I mean,
he had to be the guy in the chair.
Oh, the guy in the chair, I know. But does everyone need a guy in a chair? But yeah, I just felt like they gave him a lot of scenes.
That's that character is Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah,
that's Genki. His best friend in the Ultimate Spider-Man book, Miles Morales' best friend, knows he's Spider-Man. And they live together, like they're rooming together.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a constant character in the Ultimate Spider-Man.
Did they build the Death Star together out of Legos?
Not in the comics, but I think they should have.
Yeah,
pretty cool.
I'm just saying, I thought it was Spider-Man Ned coming after a while, but that's just me.
Ned coming.
Also, my other grumpy old man point: I could use less of the Robo suit. I mean, I like having some tricks to it. I don't like having an inner voice. Because to me, that gives Spider-Man less agency if there's always somebody in his ear telling
Jarvis.
Him the right thing to do. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but wait
very,
a minute.
Very
isn't
Iron
the
Man
voice it? Jennifer Connelly?
It's Jennifer Connelly.
Yes, yeah, Jennifer Connelly.
You know what? I don't even need to see her to be in love with her. So I'm okay with her. I'm really okay with her.
And she's married to Paul Bettany, who is voiced the Iron Man suit computer Jarvis.
Right,
yeah.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
Now, what did you guys think of the MJ reveal?
I loved that. And I was like, oh, I mean, obviously it's like, oh, this girl's in love with him. She just happens to be everywhere she is. Mm-hmm. And I love that she was doing the high school. They really depict it. As I said, they fleshed out high school kids way more than has been done in the past.
Right.
She was that like, oh, it's all so dumb when she's just an insecure kid that just is afraid to say she likes stuff or whatever.
Yeah.
And so that
why are you sitting here? That's why I don't have any friends.
I don't have any friends, and I like drawing people's angst.
Yeah.
That was funny to me. So the reveal that she was MJ, I was like, oh,
yeah,
fantastic.
We'll see this down the road.
What a cool, again, since they decided to just go, we gotta make it different. And I like that. Did you guys not like it or like it? Or
I liked it.
See, I didn't like it because I liked her so much. I didn't need her to be MJ.
Mm.
Just let her be her own character. She was great. I loved every scene she was in. I want to see more of her. But making her MJ just felt like unnecessary fan service.
Well, isn't Betty Brant also one of Spider-Man's girlfriends? Like
Betty Brant historically was Jameson's secretary.
Yeah.
Betty, okay. that was Elizabeth Banks in the Raimi movies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the thing about MJ is, you know, my daughter called her emo MJ. So I was like, well, you know, she's supposed to be like tall and red hair and, you know, gorgeous model. And she was like, well, she's not a senior yet. Everybody grows up. And the emo girls, the guys don't like them when you start high school, but in senior year, they become really interesting.
If there's anything I would say to my nephews that are all like 14 years old, I'd say be nice to the nerd girl.
Yeah.
Because when she gets in her 20s, she's going to be fantastic.
Well, look what happened to us.
Yeah.
Somehow along the way, we got beat up. Somehow along the way, we became the cool guys.
Yeah.
We got the attractive woman. People thought, I mean, really, seriously, everybody caught up.
Right. Well, they cast Zendaya in it, so she's like a beautiful actress.
And also, it was kind of stunt casting because she's got this huge following from all the Disney shows that she's been on.
And she was great.
She was. She was really good.
For the small amount of screen time she had, she makes the most of every second. And then when she's on a scene, you can't take your eyes off her.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they did a good job of making her look sort of quirky, cute, awkward,
right, exactly.
Not stunning, beautiful, but just sort of like...
Adorkable. So, closing thoughts on Spider-Man?
I think it's a great start to something new that they can build on. They have to skew young. And I think if you go in without the expectation of the Sam Raimi movies and that was so grounded in what the comics were, mm-hmm. if anything, I think... it will get a lot of people reading the comics that wouldn't normally read them, that might come in looking for a little bit more of that fun aspect, that sort of poppy Ferris Bueller type feel to it. For me,
and where's
exciting.
A good shop in the valley they could come by and do
Blast Off Comics.
Where could they do that?
That's such
a great question.
And you can find more information on blastoffcomics.com.
Perfect.
We have new content on our site almost every day.
Every day.
We have columnists, guest columnists, comic book writers, film screenwriters who come on and write. We have a different theme every single month, and then they come on and write about that theme. And obviously a heck of a lot of extraordinary golden, silver, Bronze Age.
Now, let's say I don't live anywhere near North Hollywood. Could I shop online at your store?
Absolutely. Yeah, we have a really great shop section of our website, and expect history. It's not come on here and buy the latest trade paperback that just came out.
Right.
It's not come on to the site and, you know, get the new Avengers comic that just came out last week. Anybody can get that anywhere. You come on to our site, you get, I think I want an Avengers comic from 1972. And certainly you can get one that's really expensive, but what we have on the site is, I just want one for $15. And I just want to read it. I just want to get it. That's what you get on the site. And that's kind of what the store is about. And certainly the podcast is about. The Blast Off podcast. It's history. We have...
Yeah. The site is also the home of Comics 101, which is a column I've been writing about the history of comics for about 15 years now. Mm-hmm. I started over at Kevin Smith's site, over at Movie Poop Shoot, and then I did it at my own site for years, and now I brought it over to Blast Off. So every week there is a historical piece for me about comics, and we transferred that over to the podcast.
Oh, that's great.
So that's awesome. So it's a wealth of knowledge you guys can... Mm-hmm.
I also do a segment called Retails. And that is, because this is my third shop and, you know, 15, 16 years of ownership. And what I do is I do stories that are human interest stories, the stories that I have heard and seen from the people in my shop over the years, sort of their stories. And it's just been a really cool, cathartic experience of telling the stories of the people who shop in my store.
Oh, cool.
That's awesome.
Well, that's
a unique comic. There's
That's how you have to survive with a comic book store now. You have to have a different edge.
Yeah,
sure.
Well, you have to have your own thing, just like the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know? A comic book shop is probably one of the more unique stores you can go into.
Mm-hmm.
And they all have a similarity to them, obviously, for the obvious, but then they also each have their own unique vibe. When I travel a lot, I'm always like, and I see a comic book, I want to go in there. Because I want to just see what this store's unique
have a different vibe.
Mm-hmm.
How does that DNA adapt to that environment?
Yeah, really want to see it. And like,
what their rent is.
Really, that's why there's such a unique thing. And because for the most part, what it seems to me, the majority of comic book, you have to love, you're not just like, well, do I sell... iPhones or do I sell, you know, like most people are like, I want to own a comic book shop because I love this medium and I have a passion for it I've had it since I was six or whatever.
Right.
And that's the thing that I want to feel that lifelong passion on these walls when I go into a comic book store because it's so different than
Well, you need to come to ours because you're looking at our shop is basically looking at our brains.
Yeah, that's true. but also we go on the idea, the philosophy that, yes, I love the product. I've been in love with it since I was 8 years old. I've been working in stores since I was 12, in New York, here in California, in London for 5 years, working in stores. I love the product, but really I do it because I love the people. Mm. It's my community. It's my tribe. I love people that read comics, and I could replace the comics any day of the week, but it's the comic store has always been the community place that's safe for people like us who have a common vocabulary mm-hmm. that we can't find just anywhere.
And do you record the podcast at the store?
Sometimes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes. We we're open 7 days a week, so sometimes it's difficult. but like I just had an interview with Thundercat, the musician Thundercat. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't get the studio in time, and we had to do it in the store. So we did it like 8 or 9 in the morning before, when it was still quiet in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And he was at what's it called, the music festival,
Coachella.
Bonnaroo.
He was on the main stage at Coachella, and he was had written something for Michael McDonald, and they were doing this story. And he came all the way, did the interview in the store, in the comic store, and then a car showed up. And he got in the car and went back to Coachella to do his next.
Oh, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was super cool.
And then, like last month, we went down to San Diego to the IDW offices to interview Chris Ryle, their chief creative officer.
Yeah.
So we basically do the podcast wherever we need to.
Well, I just got back from France. I was in Paris to interview Alejandro Jodorowsky.
Nice.
So that was a very interesting journey.
Will we see you guys at Comic-Con next week?
I'll be there. I believe you'll be manning the store.
I actually make more money in the store during Comic-Con than going to the show itself.
Yes. I'll be there at AEW's booth signing my new Star Trek book, which you can get at Blastoff, by the way.
Yeah.
My new Star Trek series is Star Trek The Next Generation, Mirror Broken. It's the mirror universe versions of Picard and Riker and Data, which had never been told before. Issues cool. 1 and 2 of that are out right now. So I'll be there signing that at Comic-Con.
Oh, my girlfriend's a huge. She's a Next Gen fan. She would love that.
Now, isn't there a Next Gen Aliens crossover?
Well,
okay, I'm going to lean back for a second.
I got this book called Star Next Generation Mirror Broken. That's fantastic, right?
Yeah.
Ask me about that again in a year.
Yeah.
So. Sounds good. All we'll see you guys at Comic-Con. Yeah.
You heard it here first.
You heard nothing here first.
It's just between us.
Yes.
Got it. Well, that's our show, you guys. Thank you so much. This was fantastic. Awesome.
Thanks
that
for having us.
Really fun.
We're definitely going to come by the store for sure.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Blastoffcomics.com is the site.
Yeah, that's right.
Also Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, we're everywhere.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Scott Tipton, Judd Myers, thank you for being on Spider-Man Spoiler Ep. Number 58. This isn't the 58th Spider-Man spoiler, but always it's deceiving.
It feels that way.
Our titles are always a little messy.
Yes.
Always a little messy.
And they will continue to
good.
Be so.
Thank God. Well, thank you so much. Thank you to everybody here at ATC, Aaron Brungardt, for running the knobs. And
thanks to the Patreon subscribers.
Yes.
We're doing these spoiler eps because you guys got us to that first goal.
Yep. So we're doing 2 spoiler eps a month. So it'll be this one, and then the next one we'll do will be War of the Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
So listen to that, and of course, patreon.com/comedyfilmnerds, and like us and subscribe to us on all the other various places. And if you're new, welcome, and the regular episode we do is every week, and it goes over the movies that just came out, so that's all on iTunes, same place, wherever you got this that you're listening to, you can get the regular ones.
It'll be in the same place.
In the same place. Comedy Film Nerds. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini, and as always, remember,
Han shot first.
Ask me again in a year.